the role that design plays is one of connective tissue, because I do believe that as designers, we pull all of that together.
Hi, everyone. I'm Amy Devers, and this is Clever. Today, I'm talking to Brian Rice. Currently the Global Chief Brand and Design Officer at 3M, Brian is an accomplished designer and creative leader. He's worked for some of the world's most valuable, trusted, and iconic brands, including Procter & Gamble, the Coca-Cola Company, and Bristol-Myers Squibb. A dedicated team leader, builder, coach, mentor, friend, husband, and father, he's committed to design as a tool that can move us in the direction of justice, to increase diversity and inclusion with an approach to design that is nuanced, inspiring, and thought-provoking. Here's Brian.
I'm Brian Rice, and I am the Chief Brand and Design Officer for the 3M Company. I'm based here in Atlanta, Georgia, for the short term, but will slowly migrate my way up to St. Paul, where our headquarters is. What I do is I lead our global brand and design capability across the enterprise. And the why I do it is because I'm passionate about the role that brands play and design, for that matter, in driving business growth.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Well, I am excited to hear all about that. But before we get to what you're doing now, I always love to go back to the beginning and understand how you got to be who you are now. So can you talk to me about the formative years and paint the picture of your childhood for me?
I'm a bit of a hybrid coast kid, I guess. I was born in South Jersey, but grew up in Central Florida, Orlando. I'm a bit of a product of divorce, in so much that when my parents separated, she wanted to go as far as she could away from the situation that she was in. But I say that with a smile, and I'll tell you why. I think experiencing those two worlds and that situation certainly made me into the person I am today, right? A greater appreciation for two different types of environment, right? Different kinds of people. And nothing could be more different than, you know, kind of South Jersey beaches and the entertainment world of Orlando, Florida. And so it was a really amazing kind of experience kind of growing up, my brother and I and my mom, but certainly kind of set me on the path that I think, looking back on it, that I'm on now.
And how so? I mean, that hybrid experience, obviously you get to sort of juxtapose the differences and the similarities. I'm sure if your parents, with a smile on your face, if they wanted to get as far away from each other as they possibly could, I'm sure there were two different sort of philosophies or perspectives coming from your parents. And how do you feel like you synthesized or synergized all of that into your one person, your one Brian Rice?
Yeah, I think it opened up the world, right? That there was more to life than any given situation. So, you know, those summers spent with my dad walking on the boardwalk in Atlantic City and kind of seeing the sights and seeing all of the different ways that people kind of live and thrive and do what they do. Being able to kind of see all of that, it's like, oh, okay, that's different, right? But yet being able to live in Orlando under the lights of the entertainment and tourism industry, You got to see that world, being able to experience two different climates, two different cultures, two different worlds, if you will, was probably, you know, kind of looking back on it, just not an opportunity many people get. And so that just that reframe of, yeah, this could be a pretty bad situation, that away from my dad, away from my mom, that sort of thing. But I think my brother and I tried to use it to our advantage. We could bring some East Coast down south, right? Mm-hmm, and a little of the south, right? You know, kind of up north. And so it had a profound effect on just how I thought about things and how I experienced things, and really knowing that, yeah, there's another way to do X, or there's another way to do Y. So gave me that broader perspective.
Gosh, that's such an important thing, I think, in our formative years, to just kind of know from the beginning that there's always another way to do things, and they don't necessarily have to stay the way they are right now. And so I'm kind of curious how this evolved in your teenage years. I just know from my personal experience, my parents aren't divorced, but from my friends, you know, even if their parents lived in the same city, they were kind of shuttled back and forth. And in the teenage years, it got kind of difficult for them to split their lives like that. I'm wondering if this same kind of wonder and excitement that you had in experiencing both places stayed as you kind of grew into your young adult self and started manifesting your own creativity and your own expression and your own identity.
I think it did. And I think you said a little bit, you know, it's that notion or that idea of hope, that there's something else, right? Mm. And so I think growing up, I kind of knew that there was something else beyond the neighborhood that I lived in, the block that I lived on, right? The things that I did, you know? And so it was always where my curiosity, you know, came from at an early age. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, so that notion of like, what if, or how come, or why, you know, those were always the, you know, kind of questions that were playing in my head as a teenager, right? And just knowing, living with a single mom, trying to make ends meet. I even thought about like, okay, I know I want to go to college, but how am I going to get there? What are all the different ways that I could possibly do it? Knowing that maybe cash was not the easiest way.
Sure. So you start sort of looking at all the options and clues and leads that you can pull.
Exactly. Most of my friends would probably tell me I'm lying, but I'm pretty quiet as a person just in general, even though I got a lot to say, right? It was pretty quiet. But all of this was happening in my head, you know, these conversations, right? You know, like, okay, do this or I can do that. All of these conversations, kind of taking it in and observing and doing all of those things while I'm trying to figure out how can I just get to the next right answer, right? Or get to the next, you know, kind of right thing. Just again, taking that family situation that was really out of my control and figuring out how to make the best of it, right? And I think that's how it's kind of provoked me to continually kind of think about, well, what are all the different options that we can think through? So it's that eternal optimism, I guess, is probably the best way to describe it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. What do you attribute being wired for optimism to? Because I don't know if everybody's born that way, but you certainly seem able to access it within yourself from the get.
Yeah, I think part of it, and I'll be honest, I mean, it wasn't always the case all the time.
That's good. That means you're human.
Yes, that's right. But it always felt better than the pessimistic side. And so just kind of thinking about, you know, kind of what's possible always just brought some internal joy. And I think that's kind of what fueled my creative side of, you know, kind of my being. I did well in grade school and high school when I introduced myself to, you know, to new folks. It's like I'm equally kind of left brain, right brain, right? Like straight A student, right? But could create with the best of them. I was always had that evenly yoked between both places because I actually went to college on an academic scholarship. It wasn't a creative, you know, scholarship. And so I think all of my upbringings and all of that experience, you know, kind of said to me is that I got to think through a number of different options because I can't run that fast, right? I can't do this that good. And so I need to have a couple of backup plans so that I can get to kind of where I'm trying to go.
And I think that's such a kind of a magic combination is being able to think analytically and creatively and to know how to speak both of those languages, because sometimes it's a matter of getting an idea across to somebody who needs to know that you've thought about it analytically in order for them to really hear you, or vice versa.
And it requires you, or I think it requires sometimes to hold the contradiction, right?
Yes.
you know, because you got these dueling sides. Well, I can see that. you know, side of the equation, but I can also see this side of the equation, right? And so I think it's kind of taught me to hold those in balance, right?
Yes. And you know, when you just said that, I got this really vivid image of holding that contradiction also gives you the kind of power to reverse engineer from both sides back towards the middle or towards the other side.
Absolutely.
So I have a question that's sort of personal, you know, coming from my experience. I've done a little bit of work in the Orlando area, and you mentioned Orlando and Atlantic City, and they're both kind of hubs for tourism. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if, do you recognize any impact that seeing the sort of transience of tourism or the migrations of people may have imprinted on you? Because both of those cities would have had a lot of that kind of activity.
Oh, for sure. You definitely notice the differences, right? You notice that there are different kinds of people, right? And I think growing up in Orlando, because I did grade school and high school in Orlando, really diverse, right? You know, just you would have people in class from all kinds of races, right? You know, from being able to speak English to no one being, you know, English being a second or third language, right? And so you definitely got to see that, you know, and so you don't think about those things until you're much older, right? And much grayer and all of that, where you kind of think about, it's like, oh, that was pretty cool that I had a friend in, you know, elementary school that spoke Russian. You know, you don't think about the gift of that level of diversity, right? And just likewise, I think also it's kind of, as I think back on it, is where I had my first kind of started feeling in love with brands, right? And so you kind of see the entertainment and tourism and the attraction and all of those things, even in both places, right? You could actually see how that come to life. It's like, oh, wow, who created that? I wonder why they did it like that. Why did they choose those colors? Like, it's all of those why kind of questions that used to fascinate me.
So is that where you got interested in graphic design? And how did you find your way to studying graphic design at Florida A&M?
Yeah, all of an accident, to be quite honest with you. I thought that I was going to go to school to be an engineer. And of course, that's what I told my mom I'm going to do. I got a full ride, all of that kind of good stuff. And my first, like, two semesters of college, you know, they start to give you a taste of the major. And I didn't like that taste.
You're like, nah.
I don't think this is it, right? Now stick a pin in that, right? Now, so growing up in an African-American household, my mother really gave me the choice. Like, you can be a doctor, a lawyer, right? A teacher, right? All of these respectable careers, right? And I think maybe engineering was in there. I knew very little about design going into college, even though I was doing it. And so all we knew was the starving artists in the park. And so for me to say, hey, I want to go to college to be a designer, I'd have probably gotten kicked out. And so I figured, well, engineering and back to that left brain kind of thing and talking to guidance counselor, oh, you'll be a great engineer and all of those things. You know, I kind of leaned into it. Get to college, not so much. I don't think that's for me. And I talked to my freshman counselor on campus and go through the usual kind of, well, what do you like to do? If you didn't get paid for it, right? Like, what would you do? You know, kind of stuff. I told her about some of the stuff I used to do in grade school. And she's like, you know, you need to go down there and check with the design department. At that time, it was called graphic design. And so I went down there and I fell in love. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so me. I'm staring at these Macs and there's a press room down the hall. And it's like, you know, a lot of activity. And I see all of this great creative on the wall. And that's literally how I got into it and hadn't looked back.
That is a wonderful story, and one I've heard from a lot of different people, too. The parental dissuasion of the creative arts, that's an epidemic. But the other thing is, so many people just don't really know that design is an option that you can study academically until they stumble across it in college. But then when they find it, they find their people, they find the kind of energy and activity, like you said, that feels so good to them that it just clicks.
Right.
So, okay, how did you convince your mom that this was going to be okay? Because clearly you're doing all right for yourself, so it worked out.
Well, I tell you, the rest of that story, so Brian decides he's going to go change his major, but he's not going to tell his mom.
Oh.
And so, because I was a pretty good student, my mother very seldom would ask me for my report card. Like, she would rarely say, how are your grades? You know, rarely. I'm in my third year, and she says, how are your grades? I kind of look up and then she says, well, let me see. You know, of course, I say they're great, you know, and she says, well, let me see. I go, you know, pull out some grades for her to see, you know, which is the transcript. God bless her soul. She says, you know, I've never gone to college, but I have a feeling that color theory and typography one or two is not engineering.
Oh, and you got found out.
I was caught, right? And so she sees all of these class, art history, art, you know, all of these designs that have nothing to do with with engineering.
But you got A's in all of them, right?
I got A's in all of them, right? And so then I'm fessing up because she can't, you know, she couldn't see the career path. I don't think it's parents' fault that they don't know. Jesus said, I want you to be successful. These are the kinds of careers that, you know, the people I know are successful. And, you know, she pointed me where she knew, right?
Yeah. No, I think you're right. It's a greater PR problem within design we have to solve.
Absolutely. So she was doing what, you know, again, would heighten my chances of success. And I think not until I, again, graduated, right? And I got my first job. And so when she realized the first job that I got, that's when she said, oh, there might be something more to this, right? No matter how much I explain what designers do and all of that, it's like, yeah, it still kind of, you know, sound a little wishy-washy to me.
A little pipe dreamish.
That's right. That's right. Right. Until you bring home a check or until I can actually kind of quote unquote see it, right? It's just art.
So what was that first job that convinced your mom?
Well, first job was Procter & Gamble up in Cincinnati.
Oh, that's legit. No wonder.
That's kind of legit, right?
Yeah.
And what made it even more legit is when I, you know, received the offer letter to come, I showed her, hey, this is what I'm going to be doing. These are the brands that they want me to work on, which she was kind of familiar with. And then she saw the, she saw the salary. And I got to tell you, it's probably one of the few times that I just saw her bawl. She just was in tears.
I feel for, you know, as a mother who just really wants for her children to be okay, like seeing that salary gave her a sense of relief, I'm sure.
Yes. Not only relief, but to put it in perspective, right? In so much that she's like, do you know how much this is? I'm like, no, right? And so she put it in perspective by showing me her paycheck.
Oh.
So this is a woman that raised two kids on her, you know, two boys on her own and said, look at this and look at this.
Wow.
That's pretty deep.
That is. Wow. Oh, my gosh. That must have done so many things for you in the moment, too, in terms of validating your trajectory, but also assuming a tremendous responsibility.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's one of those moments where you just kind of like, okay, I think I'm doing something right because you never really know, right? And so
I often you never know until hindsight.
You don't know, right? Yeah, exactly, right? And so, you know, it's kind of like the next right answer. And so that was the right answer at that time. You know, fly up to Cincinnati and, you know, kind of first time in Ohio, first time in Cincinnati, playing the corporate game, if you will.
Well, how'd the Midwest treat you? I was born and raised in the Midwest. We're welcoming people.
Sure. It was great. I mean, it was a great, great opportunity for me straight out of school. I was a bit of a guinea pig for the design department at P&G at the time because they had never really hired straight out of school for design. They had done it in all the other capabilities. And so it was a bit of, you know, kind of the one of the first employees to come in, right? You know, out of school. And I had a very rigorous kind of training program. And so I got to, you know, kind of really learn it from the ground up. Really great first boss. Some of your listeners know the value of first bosses, right? And she really just put me on a really good kind of trajectory. And, you know, it's kind of all the stuff they don't teach you in quote unquote design school. You know, she was helping to kind of shape that part. And I used to tease her. We're really good friends even today. You know, she was my mom at work, you know, you know, helped me figure out that kind of stuff. And so it was a blast. Great, great brands, you know, across, you know, healthcare and beauty care. And so it was a great ride.
It sounds like it. I feel your young enthusiasm coming from the microphone. And it sounds like it really kind of set you up. What kinds of like pivotal moments or chapters transpired for you in terms of, I don't know, your creative agency and your creative confidence?
Kind of helped you see it at a different level, right? Because certainly as I was graduating college, you know, I was thinking about, I'll go into an agency and I'll work my way up the agency route. You know, I'd done my research on that piece. The corporate piece was just totally different, right? And so it wasn't really talked about a lot during that time, right? Because corporate design groups, for the most part, were either two or three person shops, you know, kind of hidden. Yeah, they work on the creative stuff. But I think, you know, P&G had a pretty robust design department, even at that time. The importance of mentors, right, inside the company, the importance of figuring out like what you don't know, right, the importance of understanding kind of how business works, right, and why it works the way it does. And then, you know, what's the role that design can play in stewarding that or pushing that, right? Really, really kind of lessons kind of learned, right, in terms of just how people think and operate. And P&G big on the consumer piece is just, you know, it's how people think, right? And this is why they do what they do. And I can use design to maybe do something a little different, right? And so I can make them react a little different. So I think all of those kind of foundational pieces were instilled within me at that time until I was recruited away to Coca-Cola.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Support for Clever comes from Wix Studio. Instead of reading you another, let's be honest, boring ad script, Wix Studio just sent me this wild-looking Alice in Wonderland-themed website to scroll through and tell you about. So, whoa. This is not the web I'm used to. There's something called mouse parallax, which makes it feel like you can go deeper into the screen. And as I scroll down, it's like I'm falling down the rabbit hole. And things are moving in depth and perspective. Even my cursor has morphed into a glowing little orb. There are all these no-code animations that make this place feel organic and alive. And Alice is wearing some pretty cool shoes, by the way. Okay, I know I'm mixing up my narratives now, but we are definitely not in Kansas anymore. Your turn to go down the rabbit hole. Build your next web project on Wix Studio, the platform for agencies and enterprises. Hey, Clever listeners, we're getting excited for New York Design Week in May. This year will be better than ever. ICFF, North America's leading platform for contemporary design, will take place from May 19th to the 21st at the Javits Center in New York City. I'll be there, and I'm excited to let you know how Clever is collaborating with ICFF for Launchpad at Wanted, formerly known as Wanted Design Manhattan, and the Emerging Designer Showcase. Launchpad is an international platform for emerging designers that introduces new concepts and showcases prototypes of furniture, home accessories, and lighting. It is the best place for manufacturers to meet new designers, discover fresh ideas, and potential products to develop. The best of Launchpad winners will be selected by a jury of renowned industry professionals, led by yours truly. And they will go on to be featured in another edition of the popular Emerging Designers Showcase. I'll be leading the Emerging Designers Showcase live on the Talks main stage, where the five Launchpad finalists will have a chance to present their projects to our esteemed panel of professionals. It's always a really good time. So mark your calendars for Sunday, May 19th at 4 p.m. Both Launchpad and the Emerging Designer Showcase are presented with media partners Clever, that's us, and Design Milk, and with support from American Standard and Lumens. Visit ICFF.com to learn more and register to attend. Those are the letters ICFF.com. Come by and say hi. I would love to see you there.
Hey,
Yeah, so you've had a pretty great ride all in all. I mean, Coca-Cola, Bristol-Myers Squibb, back to Procter & Gamble, it looks like, and then Georgia-Pacific before 3M. And all the while, like, you've had a chance to influence some of the most recognizable brands like Sprite, Tide, Brawny. I mean, things that are more than household names. Tell us the highlights or the most meaningful or challenging or illuminating chapters in this work.
Yeah, well, it's funny. The three brands that you mentioned are probably the three brands that would be in my top five right now that I really, really enjoyed working. And so even if I just start with Sprite, right, you know, probably the coolest brand in at the time in the Coca-Cola company's portfolio, right? I was the target. I was the Sprite kid. That whole notion of trusting your instincts and obeying your thirst, right? Like this brand probably spoke
that.
To me. Yeah, you remember all of that, right? I'm dating myself a little bit, right? But I was that kid. It didn't even feel like work. It was kind of like, this is kind of what I did. You know, having that connection to a brand that you work on or finding a piece of that is truly important, right? In kind of what you do, why you do it, how you do it. If I think about working on Tide, right? Number one laundry detergent brand in the U.S., right? It is big. Lots of eyes on it. It's iconic. You have to create within a tighter box because there's so many eyeballs on it. It's all of those lessons of, okay, how can I be creative knowing that there is a level of attention on this business and this brand that myself and team are responsible for, right? And even the extended team, agency partners, that kind of thing. And so loved working on the bigness of that brand during my second trip back to P&G. And then Brawny, right? Paper towels, right? Everybody knows the brand, right? But, you know, it was kind of the underdog brand. And so it's like, ooh, you know, working on underdogs. I know what it feels like to be an underdog. And so how do I kind of create some successes with this underdog brand that helps an organization that was really didn't understand what design was all about? They can kind of see it come to life, right? In either packaging design or product design or even just a brand story, if you will.
Well, yeah, that communication piece is like crucial.
Absolutely. It was one of the, you know, highlights of my career at Georgia Pacific that, you know, kind of helped that organization kind of see is like, oh, you can win with design. You know, it only takes, a bit of attention, right? And you can certainly compete, which is at the end of the day, what I think any brand would want, right? Is just the opportunity to compete in a space, no matter how big or how small.
Otherwise, its existence isn't justified.
That's right. And so that's certainly, you know, kind of three of the top five that you pulled out that certainly I've learned a lot from.
Well, now as the chief brand and design officer for 3M, I'm really curious what that work looks like. Our listeners maybe remember this about me. I'm a bit of a 3M groupie. I know it's weird, but as a designer and maker, I've seen just how relevant and pervasive 3M products and scientific innovations are to the built environment, but it's typically not consumer facing. I mean, the results of all of 3M's science usually go into products that are then made by somebody else, and the 3M involvement isn't necessarily trumpeted. So what does your work look like? Not only that, but 3M, I don't know how many different divisions there are, but you as the galactic overlord of all of these divisions have to wrangle how the brand experience is cohesive across. I mean, it's overwhelming. Tell me about it.
It is certainly. And you know this, I've only been with the company a short while, and certainly every day I'm like learning like something new.
That's what I love about it.
I heard an expression a couple days ago, something like, and I probably won't get this totally right, but something like a 3M product is less than 3 meters away from you. At any given time.
It's true.
And I got to thinking about that. And so, you know, you start looking around your desk and beyond the obvious, right? Consumer products, Post-its, things like that. You know, I got this iPhone here, right? And okay, what's helping that stick to the wall, right? And all of these products that we make, and which was part of the attraction, right, is that multilateral, right, multi-business units. It's not just local, it's global. It's global in a big way. It's a very familiar brand that even pieces of it people don't know. And so I think that will certainly be kind of the challenge, right, of shaping the experience, right? Like, how can we help our customers and consumers, right? You know, kind of see it, make it a bit more obvious, right? And maybe appreciate it, right? That it's much more relevant and meaningful to the lives of our stakeholders and customers and consumers, right? And then value it. Can we get them to pay a premium for it or pay for it versus their alternatives? That really becomes a bit of our challenge in that it powers, you know, our science and technology powers a lot of other things that people don't know. The average consumer wouldn't know.
I mean, adhesives that hold skyscrapers and airplanes together.
Or the space shuttle, right?
Which is, yeah.
You know, and so, yeah. And even that, right? Like, you know, it's amazing.
Filtration in N95 masks or even the filtration in the spacesuits.
You're right.
It's just incredible. This desk I'm sitting at, I know that adhesives were used in the lamination, that abrasives were used in the construction of it, that filtration was used by the worker who made it.
Absolutely. And those are the kinds of stories, as I think about my role, is on the brand side, 3M company brand, and, you know, the products that we make. That's the piece that becomes part of our task, to figure out how to help people see it, help people appreciate it, right? And value it, right? Like that's the piece, right? In a way that makes it relevant, because that's great. But if it's not relevant, then that's problematic. And so, you know, how do we increase the relevance, which in turn will do all of those branding things that we know, build trust, build loyalty.
How do you do that? Forgive me, I've never held a corporate job, but I've often been really confused with the B2B versus B2C, because I think of all those people in businesses and I know they're also consumers. So aren't they the same people?
They are definitely the same people, but potentially different drivers behind the decision. And so an office manager who is buying product for the office, there is a bit of his or her bias in terms of one brand over the other. Now, they're buying it in bulk, right? They need it to store a certain way. They need it to do all of these other things, which could be a bigger driver than what maybe you and I might buy in the store. But you're right. We're people first, right? And so how do you appeal to that person in a way that taps into their needs, their wants, their desires, given the context?
Well, and I also know in my professional capacity, for instance, I know that the 3M respirators are the best, and I have asthma. So then that means I want the 3M filters in my home system.
It's a halo effect between one over the other. And so certainly that becomes a bit of the dilemma, right? And then you got channel needs and all of that. And so sometimes it's a matter of just taking all of those needs, right, and saying, okay, which ones are more meaningful over here for this channel, this customer, versus this channel and this customer? And ensuring that there are some things as it relates to brand governance, brand consistency, that the experience should be about the same, whether you're in this channel or that channel, because that's the equity. And so it's really, really important to ensure that there is some alignment between the two. And that differs based on the brand and that sort of thing.
Is there something, a word or a descriptor that you would use to describe 3M in its entirety, like the DNA of 3M?
That's a good one. You know, science immediately came to mind. You know, masterful at the science behind products and technology we use every day.
I was just going to say, I've toured the labs a few times, and it's just my most fascinating, wonderful experience. It's like an amusement park for me. You know, I appreciate the rigor that's going into the development of all of these innovations. But then one of the things that has just always blown me away is this culture of cross-pollination.
Absolutely.
Creative application and technological advances. And so whatever that word is that sort of encompasses the scientific and the creative into one.
That is the challenge, right? I don't know that I've figured out what the one is, right?
Right.
I do know that, you know, the role that design plays in all of that is one of connective tissue.
Yes.
Because I do believe that as designers, we pull all of that together.
And pump it all with oxygen and fluid.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I was in a conversation earlier today. We were having a conversation about, you know, the spark, or do we ignite, or do we spur, right? Like, what are those verbs? But they're all verbs, which is great, right? In that we are sometimes that connective tissue that in its simplest form can help people see what they're saying in a much more craftsmanship or technical side, building it, making it, that piece, product design, pack, whatever it might be, right? UX, all of those things. And so I think we are at a crossroads of where our organization can play a much more meaningful role in connecting all of that and kind of being a clearinghouse or a hub to help teams better collaborate, right? And to share ideas and really kind of be the source for the next generation of ideas and bringing our science back to that science work, back into things and helping it be more relevant to the customers and consumers we serve.
You have just come from a company where toilet paper was one of your your brands, and now you're at a company where N95 masks are part of the products that 3M manufactures. And these are both things that got super catapulted into the public space with the pandemic.
Who would have thought bath tissue would have been the staple of choice in your in your local grocery store, right? It was unbelievable to watch that. I'm sure one day it will be an amazing case study of human nature and what happens, right, when the first person jumps in the pool, right? And so it's just amazing to kind of see. And then like you said, on the other side of saving lives, right? And certainly improving them, but in some instances, saving them. And so just knowing that you're working for a company and brands and a business that is truly about that, that is a powerful reason to wake up in the morning.
Did you feel that? Do you feel that?
Oh, absolutely.
You're in a calling right now?
Absolutely.
I felt it. I felt it coming from you.
I've said this to my team. I said, I'm not quite sure I know why I'm here, but I'm here and we're going to figure this out together, And I've also said, I don't know if it's for this job. It might be for something else, but I'm here. We're going to figure this out together. I do believe that there is a reason why paths cross. There's a reason for it. I don't believe it happens by accident.
It sounds to me like you also are open to that curiosity and optimism within you keeps you open to figuring out, well, I'm going to trust I'm supposed to be here, and I'm going to trust that curiosity and optimism are going to lead me to what I need to know about this experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it also it beats the alternative.
Yeah.
Right? It does beat the alternative of like, why? Right. So it's back to that, optimistic outlook that, this is happening for a reason. And I was meant to be a part of this team's life and their lives. I'm excited about that.
I'm excited for you. Do you think that design-driven leadership in general, and particularly at a company with 3M's reputation and magnitude, can be effective in terms of, our greater cultural understanding of and value of the arts and design?
Oh, I think so, for sure. I think the role that we play has, if you think about what has happened the last 12 months, right, with this pandemic, the amount of quote-unquote innovation and change and unprecedented, right? Adapted, right? Flexible. Like, who other than designers that are kind of used to that, used to the flex, and that can be a bit of the calm in the storm to embrace, high levels of ambiguity, to kind of listen to the data, but also kind of feel what the intuition is telling you.
It's true. We speak in unknowns. We're comfortable with unknowns.
Yes, absolutely. And believe it or not, that can be comforting, right? That could be comforting for those who are not used to that. My mother used to say, there's a time and a place when you need to rise to this occasion, for this need. And I think certainly the role that our organization could play is pivotal in that, inside the company and outside the company. And I think this is, I think it's a space that comes natural for not just designers, but just creative thinkers, right? Just people who just happen to see it differently.
Well, and I think creative thinkers are in everyone. Everyone has the capacity to be a creative thinker if they just flex that muscle.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Kind of, dive into that gray or that ambiguity. Certainly what you want to do.
So I want to know a little bit about you personally, Brian Rice. You sound like a lovely and fascinating person. I mean, so you're in Atlanta, Georgia now, and you're going to migrate to a new city. Does that mean uprooting a family to bring with you?
The good news, bad news, I guess, in all of this is that my kids are about to be college age. I have one that's a freshman in college. My son is a freshman at a local college here, Kennesaw State. My daughter, Kylie, she is a graduating senior this year, high school senior. And so my son caught the tail end of the pandemic. My daughter caught all of it, right? And still kind of going through it. So in about, you know, call it 8 months, we will be, I guess, somewhat official empty nesters if the pandemic switches gears here. And so to your question of uprooting a family, certainly my wife and I will see if the other two come along virtually, you know, with college and things that are going on there. So, and so, but we're excited about the new chapter in our lives, right? Being best friends again, you know, and kind of doing all of those things that we forgot about, right?
Yeah.
And so we're both looking forward to it. You know, meeting the organization, meeting my new city, things of that nature. So we're pretty pumped about it.
Well, I'm excited for you. Minneapolis, St. Paul is, I think, a pretty magical area. I've got my own reasons, but I hope you get to go to Paisley Park at some point.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Sure. I've put that on the list to go check out.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So speaking of genius artistic expression, what's the last act of artistic expression that you witnessed that like moved you to your core?
You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't reflect on this past summer, the social unrest, the protests that were happening in the streets. And, you know, as I think about your question, you know, I think back to as a guy that takes in imagery and visuals, and also as a designer, looking at not just the messages of the signs or the messages or the voices, but how they were articulated. Several months back, before I started with 3M, I went and visited Black Lives Matter Plaza in D.C.
Oh, wonderful.
Got to feel the place and kind of see it. And much of the protest signs or shirts or what have you were, you know, kind of plastered around the areas of the plaza, right? And you talk about artistic expression, not only the message, but how it was executed. And you can almost feel the energy in the words that were on the signs. Many of the protesters kind of left the signs up or left it around the space. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things to kind of think about the energy, the passion, right? The unheard voices, the visual and verbal language that, you know, kind of covered the streetscape.
And echoes.
And it's just unbelievable.
It reverberates.
Yes. Yeah. Unbelievable.
With a soulfulness that feels generations and lives deep, past lives and future lives.
Yes. Right. And just the authenticity, regardless of what side of the fence you're on, you certainly appreciate someone who has a point of view and willing to share it. Even if we don't agree with it or not, I think that's what makes this democracy, this place, what it is that we have the right to kind of do that and express that. Just to watch that artistic expression and even see my daughter, you know, kind of take part, mm-hmm. right? You know, kind of watching her make her protest sign, you know, on the kitchen table to watch her expression kind of unfold. It almost brings chills, right? When you think about that and think about, you know, the importance of this moment at this time. And so, yeah, that was the first one that immediately came to mind.
I'm really glad you shared that with me. And you're headed to the area where the epicenter of the George Floyd uprisings. I didn't see the aftermath myself personally, but a good friend of mine is from Minneapolis and went back home to pay tribute, to be part of it, to just, I guess, pay his respects. He described the place where the murder took place, and he said they had reclaimed it and made it so beautiful with murals and candles.
It was absolutely amazing. I did make sure that I saw it. And it was just like, wow, the energy.
And he described that energy too. And I think that that is so powerful to talk about that energy, because that is the energy that can cleanse the trauma.
That's right. That's right. I mean, you could almost feel like it was sacred, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
And maybe when I went to see it, because I had to see it, there may have been 100, maybe 200 people, silence, right? Like just silence. You could mm-hmm. just see people kind of taking it in. You know, you kind of think about the power of what you are seeing. And so there's a reason why there's more nerves in your eyes than your mouth, right? And so, you know, you think about the importance of that, but also our responsibility as creative types of what we're putting out in the world too, right? And so we have a tremendous amount of responsibility to make sure that what we're doing is inclusive, right? And that it represents diverse perspectives, right? And that it's done with a level of authenticity that even if you disagree, that at least you know it came from a good place. I think that's incredibly important for designers and folks that are in this space to be mindful of.
I totally agree. And I also think there's a need to be also aware of the systems of oppression and systemic racism were designed, and they can be redesigned.
That's right.
And so every choice, every little incremental action that we take needs to be in the direction of justice.
That's right. I would agree.
So if you could, with all that you are, all your skill sets and the sort of power that you have in your position, and also just your wisdom that you've gained from experience, if you could magically open up like one pathway to the younger generation, what would that be?
Ooh, pathway. Truth. I think it's hope that it is possible. It's going to take sometimes blood, sweat, and tears, but it's possible. And so I think this notion of hope would be a pathway that if, you know, myself and my role and people who see me in this role provides a level of hope, or the fact that they can see what they can be, that would be a magic door I would kick down. If I could, I would.
Brian Rice, design action hero.
Right. Super galactic something.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yes.
One more, just zeroing back in on you, and this can be totally selfish if you want it to be, but what's one thing you want for yourself? An accomplishment, experience, something to witness? Something in your lifetime, all for you. I mean, not that you wouldn't share it. It can come from a self-centered place.
That's tough for me.
That's not your vibe.
it's a tough question, right? Because I think, you know, if I can be a good father, a good husband, a great friend, that's enough.
That's pretty good. That's a trifecta of awesome there.
When they're at the pulpit and they're talking about Brian Rice, if I could get them to say those three things, I think I'm good.
It sounds like you're headed in that direction. Hopefully they won't get to the pulpit to talk about you for a very long time.
That's right. That's right. You tell them to stop. If you see it going down, it's like, stop. It's not supposed to happen now.
Well, it has been a delight talking to you. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your perspective. I loved it.
I've enjoyed this. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for listening. To see images of Brian's work and read the show notes, click the link in the details of this episode on your podcast app, or go to cleverpodcast.com, where you can also sign up for our newsletter. Subscribe to Clever on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like Clever, would you please do us a favor and rate and review? It really does help us out. We also love chatting with you on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Clever Podcast, and you can find me at Amy Devers. Clever is produced by 2BDE Media, with editing by Rich Straffolino, production assistance from Ilana Nevins and Anushka Stefan, and music by L1011.